Today I'd like to talk about managing a relationship. We're going to talk about managing a relationship like through marriages and with your kids, and also talk about work a little bit. Have one story I want to start out with. During a rehearsal of a wedding, a nervous bride was having a difficult time remembering the details of, you know, the whole day of what she was going to do on her wedding day. But the pastor seen her and he says, well, when you enter the church tomorrow, you'll be walking down the aisles and you'll be walking down, you'll be walking the same aisle you've been walking down many times before. So concentrate on walking down the aisle. And when you get halfway down the aisle, concentrate on the altar. And when you get halfway down the altar, concentrate on your husband and find a lot of aisles with him. This seems to help out a lot. On the day of her wedding, she was walking down the aisle. She was saying and rehearsing to herself. She was walking. She was like, I'll alter him. I'll alter him. And everybody else, when they said it, what they were hearing was, I'll alter him. And I'm not sure how much she did in altering her husband, but I know it's a lot of wives that didn't try to alter him. I don't know how successful y'all got at that. A lot of us try to change our wives. I don't think we were very successful at that either. But we'll start reading today here in Colossians 3 and 18, and also 4 and 1. Wives, well, 18 through 25, 3 and 18 through 25. Wives, submit yourselves unto your husband, to your own husband, as is fit in the Lord. Husband, love your wives, and be not bitter against them. Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing unto the Lord. Fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be disturbed. Servants, obey in all things your master, according to the flesh, not with eye service or man pleases, but in the sight, singleness of heart, fearing God. And whatsoever ye do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord ye shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for ye serve the Lord Christ. For he that doeth wrong shall receive for the wrong which he hath done, and there is no respect in person. In Colossians 4 and 1, Master, give unto your servants that which is just and equal, knowing that ye also have a master in heaven. I want to talk about a little bit about this. Our faith must come from home with us, must start at home. The true test of relationship with Christ is how we relate to others. Or to say in another way, the home is the first place we're tested with our newness of Christ, as God shows the people, holy and dearly loved. If Jesus is supreme in our life, then it should show in how we relate to the members of our family. The followers in Colossians here say believe that true spiritual involvement is mystic and historical knowledge. Paul shows faith, showed that faith must live out in the family. Jesus referred to as Lord and Master several times in the verse because his lordship finds conclusive expression in the day-to-day routine relationships of life. The issue is function, not inferiority. As we learn in Colossians 3 and 11, cultural, racial, and even gender distinctions are no longer obstacles when it comes to salvation. Everyone is equal in Christ regardless of their status. Having said that, individuals have a role to play in the family. We are all disciples of Christ with different responsibilities in our discipleship. For instance, the husband and the wife are personal equal before God, but they each have different roles or functional purposes. The same goes true for the children and parents. The divine chain is meant to help the family run most effectively and efficiently. Relationships are meant to be reciprocal. The instruction in our text show a special concern for those who were looked down upon in the first century. For like the wives and the children were kind of looked down on in the first century, where they wasn't, there's, you know, like the husbands were. It's striking that Paul would even give them the attention since the culture of the two groups of people. Christianity elevated women and valued children. It also interests to know that Paul admonished those in authority as he tells the husbands and fathers and masters to be loving, kind, and fair. These pair are to be studied together because the relationship are reciprocal. We can't talk about the responsibility of the wife without clarifying the obligation of the husband. I won't take the time to quote this is about how the families are kind of having problems today in the world. We all can see if you watch a little news or you read here and there and see there's a lot of like disconnect in the family between the husband and the wives and the parents and the kids and just things going on at work. But we need to listen and apply to what's written in the Bible and it can help us with that. Just as he created various physical and natural laws by which the universe functions, so too, when God created the family, he gave good guidelines and practices and parameters to follow. If you ignore them, we do so at our own decision. Let's begin with one of the three relationships. God guided us for marriage. The Bible views marriage as a partnership with each partner filling a certain role. In Colossians 3:18, wives, submit yourself unto your own husband as it is fit in the Lord. Let me just say that this is probably no biblical teaching more controversial than that of the wife submitting to her husband. And let's be clear on a few things right here. Nowhere did it say the wife is to obey her husband. Children are to obey in verse 20, and it says slaves are to obey in verse 22. But wives are to submit. There's a difference. This has application to wives in the marriage relationship, not to the women in general. Both husbands and wives are to submit to the Lord and to each other. In Ephesians 5:21, submit yourself one to another in fear of God. The concept of submission is taught many places in the Bible and do not mean less than another or imply inferiority. The Greek word means to arrange oneself under the delegated authority, or come from a military word where soldiers were to be in order under the direction of their officers. In the homes, the wife is to submit to the delegated authority of her husband. I recognize that some of you may kind of, well, we might not, but you hear a lot of people say, well, they disagree with this. And the fact that a teaching is not popular is no reason to disregard it. The reason for the submission is found in the end of verse 18, as it is fitting in the Lord. Another translation puts it this way: this is what the Lord had planned for you. A wife is to submit to her husband out of the same allegiance she shows to Christ. This is not a cultural deal, but represents God's sense of order in the marital relationship. That's how he set it up from the very beginning. In 1 Timothy 2:13, for Adam was first formed and then Eve. Submission carries the idea of entrusting oneself to leadership of another to accomplish a task. When a Christian woman is submitted to the Lord and to her own husband, she will experience and release a fulfillment that can come from no other way. The end result will be an environment of growth and ministry partnership that will make a difference in the world. Fellow husbands, before we start looking at, you know, what the wife should submit to us, in verse 19, he also told us what we need to do. Husband, love your wives and be not bitter against them. Throughout the Bible, God says more about the quality of the husband leadership than he does about the wife's submission. I personally think that the responsibility for a good marriage is put more on the husband. Bad marriages are usually the result of husband's inability to love his wife instead of the refusal of the wife to be submissive. It would be hard to meet a wife who would not be willing to follow the leadership of a man who loves her unconditionally. The word husband originally meant one who holds the house together. Another image is that of a gardener cultivating the soil and keeping the weeds out. A husband, our responsibility is to love our wives by holding them together and providing the atmosphere for growth and fruitfulness in the homes. I just one story I heard about this husband who decided to take his wife to a marriage counseling. And as they were sitting there talking, the wife was talking about how, you know, she wasn't being loved and she was just crying and everything. And the counselor sitting there after a period of listening to her, and he just got up and he just gave her a big old hug. And when he gave her that hug, her whole face changed. He just changed her just by giving a hug. And he looked over to the husband and he said, you see what I've done? That's all she needed, just for you to show her a little attention. So the husband said, well, he looked at his day plan and he said, well, I'll be back on Tuesday, Thursday. But God, we have to see, sometimes we might need to just show our wives just a little bit of attention. You know, just take a little time to listen to them. Paul devoted twice as many words telling the husband to love their wife as he did in telling the wife to submit to their husband. Ephesians 5 and 25 tells us that there were two loves our wives to tell us we were to love our wives in the same way that Christ loved the church. That means I must love Vicky to the point of dying for her. An amazing demonstration of this kind of love of sacrifice happened not too long ago in Georgia. This guy, Randy Burris, who's in the front yard just, you know, doing a little yard work, and his wife was taking the baby around, you know, walking the baby around the neighborhood and everything. She was coming up the sidewalk and the car had lost control and it was headed straight for his wife and his child. And as he seen this, he ran and pushed his wife and his child out of the way and got hit and struck by the car. Now he died, but his wife and his daughter and his wife and his child lived. And that's kind of like, you know, him putting a sacrifice for his wife. And that's kind of a little correlation between, you know, having that love for your wife. The word is the gate, which is a type of love that is based on commitment, not emotional romance. If you're here this morning and you no longer feel like you're in love with your wife, let the shoot straight with you. It doesn't matter whether you love her or not. Biblically, love is a verbal and a command. In 1 Corinthians 13, 4-5, charity suffers long and is kind. Charity envies not. Charity values not itself. It is not puffed up. Do not behave itself unseemly, seeking not her own. It is not easily provoked, thinking no evil. Love does not delight in the evil, but rejoice with the truth. It always protects, it always trusts, always hopes, and always preserves. If you don't have the feeling, it doesn't mean that you can just take a pass on your responsibilities. Act with love, and the emotion will usually follow. A happy marriage does not come automatically because you're naturally self-centered and prideful. The last part of Colossians 3 and 19 challenges husbands to not be harsh with their wives. The phrase can be translated, do not be embittered or resentful towards her. This means that even if the wife is not perfectly submissive, the husband is not to be resentful. Husband must prevent a sour attitude from taking root. The only other time the word is used in the New Testament is referred to something bitter in taste. Paul is telling the husband not to call their wives honey and then act like they're bitter. As a good gardener who pulls out weeds, the husband must follow the challenge of Hebrews 12 and 15. Look diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God. Let any root of bitterness springing up trouble you and thereby be defiled. Next, Paul addressed the relationship of children in Colossians 3 and 20. Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing unto the Lord. Kids have a duty to listen and carry out the instructions of their parents. The verb here is in present tense, indicating such action is to be habitual and ongoing. When a child obeys his or her parents in everything, the Lord is pleased. According to Ephesians 6 and 3, carrying with his promise that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on earth. Obedience brings God's pleasure and comes with God's promise. As such, children must be taught its importance. In 1 Samuel 15, 22 and 23, God puts rebellions on the par with witchcraft and adultery because of the ramifications of disobedience and the blessing of obedience. Parents must take seriously the task of training children to obey. We need to be engaged and encouraged, but we must also expect obedience from our children. In Colossians 3 and 21, Father, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. In the Old Testament, Joshua was strong in his resolve for his family to serve the Lord. Eli, on the other hand, was condemned because of his failure to restrain his son. In 1 Samuel 3, 11 through 14, while Paul used the word father here to show the strategy role that dads play in the parenting, the Greek word certainly includes mothers as well. I think one reason he does specify the role of the father is because dads are more likely to kind of just, you know, shape or form of how the children are. You know, the mothers are loving and caring, but, you know, they don't really see too much of that from your dad. So, you know, the way a dad treats a child is also just as important as the way the mother is. Here are four things that a father can do to lead a child to discouragement. He can ignore them. A father who has no time for his child soon creates within them a deep-seated resentment. Children in these homes can grow up to feel unloved and unaccepted and may end up looking elsewhere to have their needs met. Then you can also indulge in them. This type of father gives their children everything they want. This is not good because a child who is indulged all the time can be restless, dissatisfied, or spoiled. And you can also insult them. Some dads like to criticize their kids and even call them names and ridicule them and just knock their self-esteem down. And then you can also intimidate them. Threats and unfair expectations can also mess with a child's self-esteem and scar a child for life. So we must make it easy as possible for our kids to obey. The way we treat them has a lot to do with their ability and willingness to fulfill responsibility at home. In Ephesians 6 and 4, and ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurturing and admonition of the Lord. Here's a brief inventory that can use to determine how well you're doing in this area. Do I believe that my child are not mine, but rather a gift from God entrusted to me? Am I partnering with God to enable my child to become the men and women He intended them to be? Do they know how delighted and insightful I am about them? Do they feel like I'm on their side? Am I living under the relationship of Christ in my life so that my children will have a model to follow? Am I calling my children to obedience and providing corrective guidance and discipline that is both firm and fair? And also, God's ways in the workplace. Beginning in verse 22, we come to some teaching about slaves and their masters. Most homes had slaves in them, some. So this fits in the general section of how to live out our faith in the family today. Paul, at the time Paul writes, almost 50% of the inhabitants of the Roman Empire were slaves. While Paul did not call believers to overturn the institution of slavery, these verses help to bring about change for the inside. The Roman Empire only lost its commitment to slavery as the gospel penetrated further into the culture and more masters and slaves started treating each other like brothers and sisters in Christ. While there are not exactly similarities in the workplace, we can apply the passage to our job. In Colossians 3, 22 and 25, servants, obey in all things your master according to the flesh, not with eye service and men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. And whatsoever ye do, do it heartily as the Lord, and not unto men, knowing that the Lord ye shall receive the reward of inheritance, for ye serve the Lord Christ. But he that doeth wrong shall receive for the wrong which he has done, and there is no respect of persons. Do your best at your job at all times. We're to work hard not just when the boss is around, but even when he isn't. Years ago, a missionary was responsible for getting the nation to a certain job. He was frustrated because they were lazy, only worked when he was actually watching them. When he left, they would stop their jobs and just sit around. This man had a glass eye one day, and it was irritating, so he took it out and sat it on the stump. And he sat on the stump, and he left it there, and he left, and he come back, and they were working. And the reason why they were working is because they thought that eye was on, and he was watching. So another day, he left that eye there, and he left, and he come back, and they was all just sitting around. Well, one of the guys took his hat out and put it over the eye. So it's kind of like, you know, just the same as if your boss is not there, you do the same. You know, work just as hard as he was sitting there watching. Don't just all of a sudden pick up your pen or something. Just make it seem like, you know, just like you do with, you know, God is everywhere with you. Make him your boss. If that will help you better, you know, God is your boss. And just continue to do your job as the best you possibly can. And you can worship at work. That doesn't mean that you go and hold services at work. It means that you work out of reverence for the Lord. Properly understanding your job, no matter what it is, can be an act of worship. Sometimes we get this backward and we look to our job to provide us with meaning and significance. Instead, you're learning, you're looking for meaning in your career. Bring meaning to it. Bring a worshiping attitude to your job. Recognize Jesus as your boss. Since Jesus is your master, work as a servant in your job. This means that we should never be sloppy or unethical. Since verse 17 tells us to do everything in the name of the Lord, we must work for our bosses as if they were, kind of like, you know, but you don't want to never compare your bosses to the Lord. Reverence for the Lord, and in verse 23, work as working for the Lord, not for men. In verse 24, you receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. Your employer may pay your salary, but it is the Lord for whom you are working for. You know, you're working for a raise for the next life. Verse 24 tells us that when we do our best, when we worship at our work, and when we recognize Jesus as our boss, we will receive the internal compensation and benefit package that is out of this world. Verse 25 reminds us of our behavior. Whether good or bad, will lead to a payday in the next life. In our relationship, in order to make our relationship work, we must work at them. Let me give you a few, let me just give you a run of kind of what I talked about. Marriage. If your marital relationship is a bit rocky, remember this. If one spouse is willing to change, the marriage can change. Wives, you don't have to wait for your husband to be more loving before you submit to him. In fact, as you respect him and affirm his significance, his love may start flowing. And likewise, husbands, you don't have to hold out on love until they see that their wives act more submissive. When you determine to love your wife as Christ loved the church, you will make it much easier for your wife to submit to your loving leadership. I mean, like, why? You can tell your husband today that with God's help, you're going to follow his lead. And if you can think of anything you've been holding out on, just mention it to him. And husbands, likewise, think of one thing you can do to show your wife that you will be there for them. Just listen to them. Do something that they want to do that you don't like for them. So just any little thing. Determine today to take the steps that you need, whether you are a parent or a child. Children, practice first-time obedience. When your parent asks you to do something, or tell you to do or not to do something, just say yes ma'am, yes sir, and just not do it. Don't stomp your foot or get an attitude with them. Just, how about we just change it up a little bit and just say, okay, I'll do it. And see what the response of that might be. It might be something totally different than what you expect. And parents, likewise. You see, try just asking, you know, just, hey, how your day going? You know, what have I done to maybe make you feel bad this week or something? Just sit down and talk with them. Show them that you love them. You know, you never know how that might affect them. And work is never too late to bring Jesus to work with you. Employees, try taking pictures of Jesus as your boss this week. Think through how work will be different with him behind the desk as your supervisor. And employers, most sometimes you look at your, or you pray for your employees, you know, by name every week, of the week. And just go over there and ask them how they're doing, you know, just talk to them. You never know, they might have something going on in their life that just by you going over there and saying, you know, how you doing, what you been up to, that, you know, that might touch them, that they, you know, might put them in a better way. You just never know. Everything we do in marriage, in the family, and in the workplace must be done in recognition that we have a master over us. As such, our attitude should always be to please him, whether through submitting or loving, obeying or encouraging, working or supervising. Our master will reward us for our service to him. We come back to the conclusion to Colossians question. Is Jesus supreme in your life? If he is, then he will alter you if you allow him. That's all I have for today. If you're subject to the call or need the prayers of the church, come as we stand and sing the song that was selected.